Pesachim, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Ches, 4:8. The Mishnah is going to list now six things that the people of Jericho, did that the Chazal, the rabbis, did not agree with. The first of them has to do with work on Erev Pesach, and that's why it's featured here. But we'll discuss a number of things. What's important to realize here is we're going to say that they did six things, all of which the rabbis disagreed with. However, three of them, they gave them some formal censure. They were michu b'yadam. They protested formally their actions. And three of them, they didn't. They let those things slide. So the Mishnah says, Shisha devarim asu anshei Yericho. There were six things that the people of Jericho did. Al shlosha michu b'yadam. For three of them, the Chachamim formally censured them. They gave reproof. But the other three, notwithstanding the fact that the rabbis disagreed with what they did, the rabbis did not formally reprove them. And these are those that the rabbis did not formally censure them. The first is Markivin de Kalim Kol Hayom. On the day before Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, even after Chatzos, when labor is forbidden, the people of Jericho would graft date trees. Date trees there basically came in two varieties, one which bore fruit and one which didn't bear fruit. And what they would do is they would graft onto the stalk of a non-bearing fruit tree, a scion, like a branch, let's call it, of a fruit-bearing date palm, and that would make a plant that would give fruit. So they did that even after Chatzos. Their concern was that this was like a dover of it, a thing that they would cause them a great loss otherwise, because it was obviously a particular timing issue with regards to the seasons and the setting up of these date palms, and dates were a central part of their diet. So since they reasoned it was a davra aved and we would be permitted to do even on Chol HaMoed, for sure it would be permitted to do even on the 14th in the afternoon. And while the rabbis didn't necessarily agree with that, they didn't agree with that rationale, they thought the rationale was sufficient to not demand that the Chacham make a formal censure of their activities. The second thing, and now we move away from Pesach to other topics, is V'chorchin. Koreach is like a sandwich, like Korach, the Korach of Pesach Seder, in other words, of a kricha is like a wrap. So they would combine Es HaShma. Excuse me, Korchin Es Shema. They would bundle up the Kriya Shema together. The point here is that after they said the first pasuk Kriya Shema, either they two pshat in the Bar Tanur brings, either they didn't say Baruch Shem Kavod, or they didn't wait sufficiently after the saying of Echad. So both things in turn, I'll explain briefly. When Moshe Rabbeinu in Veschanan writes the Shema, so the pasuk of Shema and the second pasuk of Ahavta follow back to back. However, back in Bereshis, when Yaakov Avinu was nearing his death, he called his sons to sit around him, and he intended to reveal to them what would happen in the future and the events of the end of time, when that would be. And at that point, the Shechina left him because it didn't want the revelation to come out about when Mashiach HaZeder would come. And Yaakov Avinu was concerned that the Shechina leaving him was because there was some problem with one of his, or more than one of his children, in terms of their emunah, etc. So when he was concerned about that, the children responded, meaning the Shifteka, the 12 children of Yaakov, told him in unison, Shema Yisrael. Yisrael was Yaakov Avinu's name. Listen, Father Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We are all agreeing in our minds to the fidelity to the same one God as you. And there's no reason to be concerned about us having some kind of psul, some kind of, inadequacy in terms of Ramuna, etc. And in relief to that, Yaakov Avinu responded by saying, Baruch Shem Kavod, Malchus Leilam Voed, which is, he blessed Hashem and hope, expresses hope that Hashem's reign and expression of his reign would be manifest forever here in Olam Hazeh. So the Chazal in the Gemara here in Pesachim say that the rabbis were in a bit of a conundrum what to do, they didn't want to insert the Baruch Shem Kavod verse, if you will, after Shema before Vahavta, because that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu did. On the other hand, it is what Yaakov Avinu did. So the resolution was to insert Baruch Shem Kavod, but only in a whisper. And of course, that's what we do, Bizman Hazeh. We whisper Baruch Shem Kavod. But the people of Yericho didn't do that. They just skipped the Baruch Shem Kavod, and the rabbis didn't like it, but they didn't formally make a macha, a censure. The other pshat in the Bar Tanura is that after they said the word Echad of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, so the proper thing to do is that one should be ma'arich, should protract the articulation of the Dalit sound, and we actually can't do that anymore because the way Ashkenazim and Sephardim today pronounce the Dalit like the letter D, there's no way really to extend it out. But the original pronunciation of the Dalit without the dot in it has some, like something like a th sound, and because of that, that would allow Echad to be extended out, and that's the din. Nowadays, we slightly protract the pronunciation of Echad, but the point is we pause for a moment after saying Echad to contemplate and accept upon ourselves the Malchus, the sovereignty of Hashem over the whole world and over ourselves. That takes a moment, so we have to pause for a moment to accept that upon ourselves before going on to the next pasuk referring to the expression and the mitzvah to love Hashem. So that takes a moment. You have to pause and think about that and be mamlech Hashem. And the people of Yericho didn't do that. According to the second pshat in the Bar Tanura, they just rushed through like a sandwich. They just kind of bundled it all together. And that was not satisfactory as a minhag, but nevertheless, the rabbis didn't make a formal censure of it. And the third thing that they did was v'kotzrin v'gotzrin lefnei ha'omer. They would kotzer, which is to reap grain, v'gotzrin, and they would stack the grain, and pile up the grain into a gadish, into like a pile, a haystack, or a grain stack, lefnei ha'omer, prior to the offering of the korban ha'omer, which was done on the 16th of Nisan, meaning the first day of Chol HaMoed, of Pesach. So this is referring to the fact that there's a din that Chadash, the new year's grain crop, is forbidden for consumption until after the Omer is brought, or Bizman Hazeh without a korban Omer being brought. At least it's restricted as Chadash until the 16th of Nisan. Now, Midrabanan, the rabbi said, even in a place where they wouldn't be collecting the Omer, because the truth is you're actually not allowed to even harvest grain prior to the bringing of the Omer where that grain could have been used for the Omer, but even in a place where you're too far from Jerusalem to even think about bringing that grain as the Omer, still, Midrabban, they said, even if you're going to harvest it, you shouldn't stack, meaning pile the grain until after the Omer is brought, lest you get distracted and come to eat the grain. So it's a din d'rabbanan not to pile the grain up before bringing the Omer. And the people of Yericho ignored that din d'rabbanan, and they piled their grain up anyways. And that was objectionable to the rabbis, but they actually made no formal objection. In all three of those cases, therefore, v'lo michu bi'adam, the rabbi didn't express a formal complaint or protest to the people of Yericho. On the other hand, v'elu shemichu bi'adam, the following three things that they did were sufficiently objectionable that the rabbis actually did make a formal macha, a censure of what they did. The first is, matirin gamzios shel hekdesh. They permitted the growths of hekdesh, of consecrated trees. The story here is that there were certain trees that were being chopped down by robbers, and the way they would preempt that from happening is by being makdishem to dedicate the tree to the base of Mikdash. Yes, it's fabulously ironic that the thieves of yesteryear wouldn't steal the trees if they were the base of Mikdash's trees, just their private people's trees. But that seems to be the case, as the Gemara describes it. So, once you're makdish something, you give it to the base of Mikdash, and it's hekdesh, it's based on Mikdash property, so getting benefit from such a thing is forbidden, to misappropriate sanctified anything, actually anything that's sanctified to the base of Mikdash is called me'ila, and if one does an act of me'ila, so he has to bring an asham me'ilos, a guilt offering for doing me'ila, as well as replace what he stole, and being mosif achomish, add an extra 25% surcharge. That only applies, however, to things that actually were consecrated. If you consecrate a tree, and then after that, new apples grow on the tree, or new branches grow on the tree, so then, technically, if one would eat the apple or the branch, so then he would not be committing an act of me'ila, because it wasn't the apple or the branch that was sanctified, but only the tree itself. So there are two pshatim exactly what they did, whether it's taking the branches or taking the apples, so to speak, the fruit from the tree. Either way, the point is that they reasoned that since it's not me'ila, it would be permitted to take the growths from the tree. However, there's an iser derabanan of getting benefit even from the growths from such a tree, and therefore the rabbis didn't like what they did and actually formally protested that. Second of all, v'ochlin metachas hanisharim b'shabbos. Literally, the words here mean, and they ate from beneath, and then it doesn't say what they were eating or what they were beneath, hanoshim, that fell, b'shabbos, on Shabbos. So the missing words here are that they ate beneath the fruit trees from the fruit that fell from those trees, and they ate that fruit on Shabbos. Okay, that's what the words literally mean. The case is, we're talking about fruit that, fruit that falls from a tree. So if fruit fell from the tree from before Shabbos, so then the fruit is totally edible, there's no mukta issue, because when Shabbos came in already, it was edible as fruit. That's fine. There is an issue of gathering fruit from beneath a tree, but this is not, that's called the ma'amer, it's a malach all to itself on Shabbos. But we're not talking about that, we're talking about just simply sitting under an apple tree and picking up an apple off the ground and eating it. So if it fell before Shabbos, so then it's not a problem. Everyone agrees you could eat that apple. If it fell after Shabbos came in, everyone agrees that apple is a muktzah. The reason why is because when Shabbos came in, it wasn't ready for consumption. You can't pick apples from trees on Shabbos. Therefore, the apple was not ready for human consumption. And therefore, now that it becomes available on Shabbos, it's a new thing, which is muktzah. It wasn't set aside for use on Shabbos before Shabbos came in. Fine. And the people of Yericho agree to that also. The contentious point is, what happens if you don't know whether the apple fell before Shabbos came in or after Shabbos came in? So then it's a suffix, it's a doubtful apple. Maybe it's muktzah, maybe it isn't. And the people of Yericho reasoned that since the halacha of muktzah is only a rabbinic enactment, it's a din derabanan, and the overriding rule that applies to derabanans is suffix derabanan lahakel. One can be lenient in a doubtful case that involves, at worst, a violation of a rabbinic halacha. So they said, listen, these apples may have fallen on Shabbos, they may have fallen before Shabbos. Either way, we don't know, but that makes them maybe muktza, but it's a suffix derabanan, and therefore we should be able to lenient and eat from these apples. The rabbis, however, disagreed with that. And they said, no, when it comes to muktza, so we don't have the rule of suffix derabanan lahakel. We have to go l'chumra, we have to be machmir when it comes to a suffix of muktza. The reason why is one of two possibilities. Either A, because they basically built the halacha of muktza based on a pasuk. It's certainly a din derabanan, but it's like they were so machet, it's a smach that's like based on a pasuk on some level, and that would be enough to make it be like they wanted to follow the pattern of a deraisa, meaning a suffix mukta, which should be asr. The second approach is that if it's a davar shesh lo matirin, which means if it's the kind of thing which if you wait around, there's a way that you can eat it in a permitted way, which certainly is the case when it comes to suffix mukta. Of an apple, because when Shabbos is over, the muktzah is no longer an issue, and therefore the apple's edible. So in such a scenario of Devarim Sheshel Matirim, they were machmir, strict, and said, so long as it's a suffix muktzah, you have to wait, and you can't eat it even on Shabbos. Whatever the lamdas is, the rabbis did not agree with the rationale of the Anshei Yericho, the Jericho residents, and therefore they formally protested. And finally, V'nosnim Pe'el Yarek. The people of Jericho would leave Peah, that means the gift, the unharvested corner of the field, a gift to the poor of Peah, even for vegetables. And the rationale was that, what's the problem? You'd say, listen, leaving extra fruits for the vegetables, vegetables to the poor people is a mitzvah, it's great. So why would they have an objection to that? The answer is that when you leave something as Peah, so it's exempt from Truma Samaisras, the various tithes that are given to the Kohanim and Levium. And if you call something Peah, but really it isn't legally Peah, so then really, while you might be doing it as a gift to the poor, when you give a gift to the poor, that gift is subject to the Hafrashas, the taking of Truma Samaisras, and the poor of Jericho were misled into thinking that the vegetables that they're collecting as so-called Peah were actually not Peah. They were just gifts, and therefore the poor people were not taking the proper trumas and maisos as they should be, and eating food that has enough truma taken from it is very not kosher. The penalty is misa b'dei shemayim, premature death. It's worse than eating bacon, so that's bad news. And therefore the rabbis they objected strongly to this practice. What were the people of Jericho thinking? So there are five conditions for produce to be eligible for or required to be left, have pay left from it, which include that it's edible, it's cultivated as food, it's protected as opposed to being left as hefker, ownerless, it draws nourishment from the ground, as opposed to, like a mushroom, which isn't a plant. It eats off that decaying material. That it's lekita suka achas, it's all harvested at the same time, one single harvest, as opposed to, say, like figs, which ripen on the tree over the course of the whole summer. And finally, machniso lekiyum, that when you collect it, it can be kept in storage for a while. It can store and last. And when it comes to certain vegetables, that's like a beet. So the people eat the beet root, that's like the bulb at the bottom. We call beets in English. Typically Americans call it that, as opposed to beet roots, like they call it in other places. And also they eat the beet leaves. Now the beet leaves certainly are not machnis and lakiyum. They would, wilt and become dried out and horrible very quickly. Nevertheless, since the beet leaves are attached to the beet root, the people of Jericho thought you could leave peah and must leave peah on the beets, even the leaves. And they were wrong, say the Chachamim, but they did it anyways, and they caused this problem of the poor people, and therefore the rabbis did umichu biyadam Chachamim, the rabbis did lodge a formal complaint against the people of Yericho for that, as well as the other two practices.